Because Charlie Kirk and all these people were just so ahead on all of this.
The conservatives have the unbeatable debate strategy. I should have never said this on stream because they all heard me and they use it even more now. It's the, I haven't heard of that thing. And it's like, well, hold on. You're saying, because Republicans, dude, they're so good. They're so good. I'm jealous, okay? Republicans are, they're just so good, okay?
And you can always just ask them, like, what is the equivalent in the Biden admin? And there's a few things that they say. Biden privately expressed anger.
Anger?
That
Pisco did this.
Yeah.
Oh, bro, are you serious?
Privately
expressed. There is a news article. Oh, conservatives always say this. Biden was the compromise, okay? And you didn't like him. You threw him out the window. So no more Biden, no more Garland. It's going to be way more aggressive on the next administration. And the conservatives deserve it. Like, they messed all of that up more than could ever be imagined, I think.
Yo, what's up?
Wow, hi, what's up, buddy? Oh my god, your scene is so festive.
Isn't it so cute? You called me at 6 p.m. on the dot.
Well, that's what time it was supposed to, right?
On time. What's up? Why can't I see you?
Well, hold on, it's coming. Jesus. My camera's gonna be really dark, okay? Don't judge me.
How much have you talked about this event? Let's hop in.
Not really much at all yet. I mean, they know like a little bit of it, but...
I was listening to Nick Fuentes on Piers Morgan a minute ago.
Yeah.
Have you listened to that shit?
I've heard a few clips, but not... I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, no. I might do it later.
Nick was more squirmy than usual. I feel like Nick usually is able to say and watch his views, but Pierce was kind of pinning him down. A lot of clips.
Yeah, I think the annoying thing about... Do you watch a lot of the Piers Morgan guy?
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm trying to fucking get your thing.
And Nick Fuentes. I mean, he's all over, bro. I want to talk to you about that as well.
Yeah. I think the most annoying thing about Piers is that, like, he has the capacity to do, I call it, like, the British journalist thing, where, like, they can be, like, super hardcore, like, ask strong questions and make people answer and stuff when he wants to, but most of the time he is okay to, like, carry water for all the Trumple people. That's it.
It's because of a personal, obviously, like, a personal relationship. He talks about it every time he's on. He's like, I was texting Trump the other day. I just think he personally likes him, and then he plays defense for him.
Do you think it's really just that, or do you think there's some, like, viewership, showmanship kind of thing where he knows that, like, there are certain views that gets him a ton of viewership and he just kind of, like...
I'm sure there's a feedback loop, too, I'm sure, where his commenters like that he runs defense. But, like, every single time he has to invoke the fact that he just was texting Trump 3 days ago. I'm sure he's done this in your heads, too.
Yeah, he has. I feel like he... I feel like anybody that talks to Trump says something like that. Like, oh, I remember... I feel like even Charlie Kirk did that a lot. I was texting the president. I was talking to the president or whatever. Yeah.
I've heard he's really captivating and charismatic and warm behind the scenes.
Indeed. I remember that horrible Bill Maher thing.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's how people... I've heard that he's actually nice behind the scenes, and I could see it. You don't think that you'd like him behind the scenes?
Yeah, but, like, that's kind of the point, right? Like, people used to do the same thing with, like, Andrew Tate. Like, the accusation with Tate is that he's, like a very captivating guy who will do whatever he needs to like scam people. And then people will meet like a scam artist, you know, in person, and they'll be like, wow, well, the scam artist guy was actually super friendly. And it's like, well, yeah, that's kind of the whole point. That's what he does.
Yeah,
you know?
That is really true.
Like, Trump
he knows how to read the room.
Yeah. And he's like an entertainer person. Like, that's his only skill set. But nobody, or at least nobody that I'm aware of, is like, God, Trump is the worst president ever because I think he'd be really bad interpersonally, you know?
That is true. Yeah. But Nick Fuentes is usually able to maneuver his way around these interviews. Piers Morgan did a good job of pinning him down. And, like, I don't know, Nick's kind of half trolling throughout it. He's biting some of the bullets. He's like, yeah, I'm racist. I'm 100% racist. But it's because he couldn't wiggle out in any other way. It was not a good look. But the thing that I wonder is, like, when you sort the comments by new, every single comment, like 90% of them are like, Nick mogged Piers. Like, Piers is out of his depth. He doesn't know what's going on. I don't understand how Nick has such a strong internet. Is it like astroturfing? Are there bots? Or is it... legit, is everybody in Pierce's comment section just pro Nick Fuentes?
Nick astroturfs super, super hard. Yeah, like he has a very, very, very dedicated fan base. So 100 of his fans will amplify as much fandom as like 100,000 of some other people's fans. Like, they're very deliberate about going to areas, spamming comments, making different accounts to do it, and everything else. That being said, he's getting more play on larger shows, so I'm sure he's also picking up some legitimately new fans as well. But
do you worry about him ever being like, do you think he could be like a legitimate operator in the Republican Party? Like, have you seen that clip of him saying that phase one is over, now it's phase two? What they're going to try to do is get all these groypers into institutions, into college campuses, into TPUSA and the Heritage Foundation, and essentially recreate what we saw with that. Remember that Politico article with the Young Republican group chat? Mm-hmm. There were actually like 20 to 30 year olds that were saying, oh gosh, Chambers, Hitler, blah, blah, blah. I think he wants to create that at scale. And he said to his audience, he was like, hide your power level. Hide your power level until it's the right moment. And part of me was like, I legit think that there's a movement that he could build. I think it's not good. We need a strong counter argument.
Yeah, I think it's possible, but I think I still feel like that he's too extreme. Like, it caps his growth quite a bit, at least with older people. I think with younger people he could be very captivating, but these are like the least politically engaged audiences. But I mean, obviously it's like, it's worth paying attention to. I think I'm curious, I guess, what you think. You're like, you're my savior. The only person who actually is willing to like argue and debate these people and bring up actual points. One thing that I don't like that people do with Fuentes all the time is, this is like a debate strategy from like 10 years ago. It's where you load up like old clips of somebody to say, like, you said this or you mentioned this about Nazism or black people or racism or whatever. And
his haircut's like visibly different. His set's like 5 years older. You're like, come on.
Yeah, and you can do it, but there's like two big problems. One is that you're avoiding talking about the actual things that he's talking about. So you're not actually giving any pushback. Like, I don't think fans of Nick Fuentes are ever being turned off by that. There might be some people who aren't aware of like the crazy stuff he said in the past. Older people who are like, "Oh, this guy's probably not good." But you're not turning off any of his current fan base. And then also, I feel like one of the big problems with liberalism, broadly speaking, over the past like 15, 20 years, has kind of been this assumed like end of history stance where liberalism is just so self-evidently awesome and great, we don't really need to defend it anymore. And when people get into that kind of lax mindset, they lose the ability to even argue against Holocaust revisionism or, you know, ultra xenophobia. And I think that, you know, as confident as I'll say that, like, I don't think that Fuentes can be a big person because of how radical his views are. I would have also said the same thing. I did say the same thing about Donald Trump. So, yeah.
No, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Liberalism needs a rebranding. That is obvious as hell. Liberals for years have had this thing where they wag the finger. And I mean, that's why I originally started watching you, because you're one of the people that goes out and debates in these spaces. And I try to do that as well, to just argue for basic liberalism. I went to these Trump rallies, and I used to have this theory that if you word things in the correct way to any Trump supporter, that they will agree with some core liberal tenets, like the funding Ukraine shit or like any of this. And honestly, we've lost some of that, obviously, because people are agreeing with some super, super illiberal shit at its core. But mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to really reclaim why immigration isn't bad, and not just economically, because now they're making these purely cultural arguments where some of them are willing to bite the bullet that they'll take the economic hit for some sort of like preserving culture. I don't know. The thing with Nick Fuentes is, obviously, this all starts with the like foundation that I disagree with his worldview and everything, but he states it in a very intuitive and captivating way where he'll be like, don't you just want your kids to look like you? Like, don't you just want your kids to kind of look how you are? Am I really a bad guy for saying that? And I shit you not, that had like 190,000 likes on Instagram, and someone that I went to school with in high school liked it. And I'm like, oh, so we're just openly like saying that, normalizing that. And it's like he says it in a really intuitive way. And then you kind of dig a few layers deeper and you see those clips of what he actually means. So I think we need to have, yeah, just stronger principles when it comes to all this. Stronger ways to out, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Stronger principles, but also like, I say this a lot when I'm arguing for stuff. Like, all of the stuff that liberalism has given us, and I think defending liberal stuff, like, these are like good, cool things. And sometimes when I hear people, especially on the cultural side of things, defend stuff, it feels like a weighty moral obligation that's like a huge fucking drag. Like, when somebody comes out and talks about, you know, like, well, diversity is our greatest strength. Like, it feels like I'm about to get lectured to about how we need to be less microaggressive, or like, it feels like this is like a burden that you have to bear, as opposed to, well, look at all the crazy different people in our country that sometimes they're really cool, sometimes they're not cool. Like, there's a bunch of unique stuff that exists in the United States of America only because of like the huge amount of people that are in this country from different cultures. Like, you walk around in cities like LA and New York City and everything else, and you see some of the most like diverse collections of people all getting along in the world. And I think there's like an advantage there, right? We host probably the greatest number of Hispanic neo-Nazi adjacent people in the entire world. That's a diversity thing, you know? I feel like sometimes when we talk about like any liberal values, they come off as very finger wavy, and they come off as like a burden, as opposed to like, you know, these are generally like good things. And sometimes there's like some obligation that you have to, you know, bear as well. But I mean, that's going to be true of everything, you know?
Yeah, and then there's the whole, like, liberalism also kind of is facing an uphill battle in any single algorithm, because no matter what platform you're on, you get incentivized to say the most extreme shit. So I don't know. I think that the clipping structure on the left, this is more of like a meta, like the clipping atmosphere of it all. But that's something I've been trying to work on, is have a few different editors who can clip and distribute stuff. Because Charlie Kirk and all these people were just so ahead on all of this. And something I said in one like speech that I gave was, for every one clip of Charlie Kirk saying that MLK Jr. was a bad guy, we should have 5 clips of us just like owning MAGA college students on redlining, uh-huh, or basic Black American history shit, or just basic, I don't know, just basic liberal core tenets. And we're missing that. We're fighting an uphill battle every single day when Elon Musk can go on Twitter and just smack everybody with so much goddamn volume. And then our worldview isn't really promoted in the same way. But yeah, we do that through debate. We do that through just showing that these people aren't really that smart.
Yeah, there's another arena that now you're participating more in that drives me insane. I don't know if you get this impression now, you know, having participated on, you know, some of these more mainstream media panels and being in front of the camera and behind the scenes and everything else. This weird double standard where conservatives can go, like conservative lawmakers, Trump, you know, Mike Johnson, you know, cabinet members, Hegseth, Bessent, or whatever, can go on TV and be interviewed and just say the most outlandishly false stuff or stupid stuff ever and never, ever, ever get real pushback. It's gotten like, if zero is no pushback and 100 is like the too much and like 50 is perfect, it's at like 2 now, okay? I've seen a couple people. There's is it Katie Collins? And there's like one other guy who do a good job at like pushing back, but everybody else is like, oh, like, can you explain what you mean when you say this thing? And it's like, oh, well, Bitcoin will save America. It's like, well, I don't know if that's true. It's like, it is. Next question. I'm like, okay. It'll just be like the most outlandishly stupid stuff in the world. And they never actually are held to account for it. And then meanwhile, it feels like on, and that's on like liberal news networks, on right-wing networks, it's obviously just propaganda 24/7. Yeah. But then when the liberals show up on the left-wing or liberal news networks, it's like, it's still like a really brutal, like everybody's so eager to show that they don't have Trump derangement syndrome, that they're not like a hyper-partisan far-left person, that they're criticizing the left so much. I don't know. I just think, even did, I don't know what Jake Tapper's problem is. Was it Tapper that tweeted, quote tweeted the at the Democrats when Obama was like feeding veterans or taking a picture of everyone? He's like, this, with all due respect, Democrats, this isn't what Veterans Day is about. And it's like, are you fucking serious, dude?
Yeah, the double standard shit's bad. I think it might be an access thing with like if you're too mean to Trump, he'll really kick you out of the room. But also, even if you're nice to Trump and you're a woman journalist, he'll still call you something like a piggy. He's attacked like 6 women journalists over the past month because he's demented as hell. But yeah, there's this really bad double standard that I've tried to illustrate in these debates where they'll endlessly criticize liberals for saying some shit, and Donald Trump said it 10 times worse. The one thing that you can always ask them, and there's no example that they have, is when Donald Trump sent out that DM to Pam Bondi. And,
the one about he sent the lawyer you need to hire and the 3 people you need to indict, that one? Or
and then 2 out of those 3 people were indicted because
by the same prosecutor they called out to indict them. Sorry.
Yeah, he forced Eric Siebert out as the Eastern District of Virginia federal prosecutor. He had Lindsey Halligan put into place, and then they forced through 2 of these indictments. And then one of the grand juries, they didn't even do it right. They only 2 people in the grand jury saw the actual indictment because she had never stepped foot in a courtroom.
Yeah, because they dropped one of the charges off the superseding indictment or whatever, and they only showed it to her. But it doesn't matter because now she's not like even appointed legally. So.
It's a sloppy authoritarian process, but the worst part is they think that Merrick Garland did like 10 times worse. They think Merrick Garland or like Biden, anyone in Biden's DOJ was doing shit like this on a daily basis. And you can always just ask them, like, what is the equivalent in the Biden admin? And there's a few things that they say. What is their one example of? Oh, Trump. Biden privately expressed anger that
Oh, bro, are you serious?
Privately
There is a news article that said that behind closed doors, Biden was upset about, I think it had to do with Merrick Garland, and was it related January to Hunter Biden, or was it the January 6th stuff? Was it,
January 6th.
That was it. No story confirming that they communicated. Like, he's not allowed to be upset. One thing that you're saying, I say all this stuff too, where I always go like, oh, well, let's compare. I've got a debate coming up with Dinesh D'Souza, and that's my whole debate thing. Okay, here's 5 things. Let's compare. Find me an equivalent on the other side. I just lost my point. There's a million things when you talk to these people that they're just so, another thing that I'll point out is when you talk about what the Democrats can do and what the Republicans can do, what the Democrats are constrained by is the highest moral compulsion you can ever place on a leader. What should they do? What ought the most morally responsible person do at any point in time? And then when you turn to Trump, it is, what is the most outer perimeter legally conceivable thing he can do, right? So if Biden comes on TV and he says something about That one, they have the zoom in with the red background or whatever, and he says the thing about
Pennsylvania.
MAGA Americans, and he's talking about people that deny the fucking election, which most of them still do to this day, by the way, and they'll point to that over and over and over and over again, and it's like, okay, well, you know, he shouldn't have said that. It was mean. It was horrible. It's like, what about when Trump sued Seltzer because he didn't like the poll? What about when Trump is awarding money to all of these people? And it's like, well, is he not legally allowed to do that? Can the president not sue people? Are people, I thought this is America. Is he not allowed to call reporters stupid? It's like, okay, well, as long as he's allowed to conceivably do it with the Supreme Court, who knows what he's not allowed to do? They defend it. It drives me insane.
What we're talking about right now is kind of what blackpills me the most out of the current state of American politics. It blackmails me the most. Like, I'll be laying there at night and I'll be thinking about how Donald Trump can do so much shit on a daily basis, whether it's his cryptocurrency or all of the shit that he does. Every single day, he weaponizes every single agency, and yet people just both sides that shit. I don't know. It really, really does bother me. But let's get to the actual real adult stuff, because someone said, where do you contribute to the fundraiser? Someone just texted me that. Have you promoted the fundraiser yet?
No, wait, hold on. Z's got a page, I think.
Yeah, what's the link for it? Do neither of us know?
She's got it. It's there.
Yeah. Do we do our debate prep like on stream or off stream? How does it usually...
Do you even debate prep these days?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Prep is very important to me.
Okay. I feel like especially for... I feel like there are so many examples. I do as well, obviously, but it's usually just focused around... like rhetoric stuff, because I feel like if you get into any examples on anything, it's brutal. Like, I feel almost bad sometimes. I'm linking to this. I think it might be this page, because it is like, it's when you start pulling out examples, it's just like literally impossible to defend anything in this administration. And the go-to, I think you've run into this a few times with that. Is it the Ken guy? Is that what his name is?
Jennings.
Yeah, Jennings. When you, the conservatives have the unbeatable debate strategy. I should have never said this on stream because they all heard me and they use it even more now. It's the I haven't heard of that thing. And it is unbelievable sometimes how much people have not heard of, like, the Eric Adams stuff, anything having to do, literally anything having to do with J6. And, like, there's so many things. Jesus.
I got to use it, though. When someone asked me about the Ukrainian lady that got stabbed on the bus, I was like, I haven't heard of that. It felt really cathartic.
Oh, no.
Even though it was a really fucked up case, but I was like, hadn't heard of it. Okay. All right, so
I'm showing this on stream.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The National Ground Game page.
But yeah, no, I do prep. The prep before the CNN is pretty important because they throw stuff at you. I mean, I only get a few hours to do the prep before that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it does devolve into rhetoric. So it'll be stuff that we've already hit on in the past. But I can kind of just pin them down on like the Pam Bondi tweet or whatever the hell I want to talk about. Record them on or like bring them down this corner. Mm-hmm. But overall, the prep is really important before this stuff, especially with this one. I feel like it's going to be definition heavy. Like, won't Andrew Wilson be an asshole about the definition of fascism?
I don't remember what there's no way that's our debate topic. I would have to check again. But when we were negotiating this, I was like very big on like, we're not having this debate. Cause I think the thing that they posed was like, is Trump a fascist? I'm not having that debate with Andrew Wilson. And I told them as much. I said, the debate is going to be like, is he like acting like an authoritarian or something like that? Because if it is over the fascist stuff, it's going to be Andrew Wilson playing definition games and screaming internal critique 400 times in 2 hours and then walking away without having discussed anything whatsoever. So fuck that.
Change it to, was January 6th an insurrection?
Oh God, no. Was that a reference?
I'm joking. I mean, I know you guys did a debate about
that.
But he does the same definition.
It was a 3-hour debate on like, well, what is an insurrection? And then it's like, can it really be that? Ha ha ha. And it's like, okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. We're not doing that. But the problem is, and then I know Myron is there as well. I just don't hear Andrew, not to be mean, I'm not trying to be mean, but I don't hear him debate on the substance very often. I feel like he kind of relies on like the philosophy tricks or like the logic tricks, basically.
Yeah. I mean, the goal is to get them defending the Trump administration. If the prompt can be that, I mean, that's the, and then I want to do some audience questions as well, because I've had some conservative people that I know who are going to be at the event say they're going to come and check it out. So hopefully there's a microphone. We can set all that up. And I filmed my Jubilee in like mid-October and they're not releasing it for another month. It's been the longest wait ever. But one of the dudes that they all really liked me after, like, I wrote my email down and they took photos, and one of the dudes just emailed me and said he wants to show up to the AM Fest thing and debate in the crowd. So I'm going to respond to him.
Nice, nice. Have you found, I feel like now, I'm actually, when you say blackpilled, I feel like most of the conversations revolve around either they don't know something, or they'll say that the Democrats did it first, even though there's absolutely nothing comparable. Or I think the most depressing thing is they start owning positions that I know they would ever, never, ever, ever accept under a Democrat. So things like with the stuff related to Pam Bondi, one argument that I get into with so many, like even lawyer type people, where they'll say things like, well, isn't the DOJ under the, doesn't the Attorney General serve at the pleasure of the president? It's like, that doesn't mean they tell him exactly what to do. And it's like, yes, it does. And that's actually totally okay. And it's like, there's no world where you would accept this under a Democratic president. You would never accept this.
Yeah, I've had to learn how to word things in stronger ways. I have, you know, Micah Irfan, he's big on Twitter. He helps me prep. He got like a perfect on his LSAT, really smart dude. So he's always helping me word things. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time I was on with Scott Jennings on CNN and I was like, you know, Trump is appointing loyalists in all of these key positions. And then he reworded it like, oh, the president appoints people that like him into positions that help him. Yeah. I'm sorry. And then as I was trying to get out my response, I think we started to wrap up. But it's like, okay, rather than saying the president is appointing loyalists, there's ways that I can word it. And I don't know. Like, how would you word that in the strongest possible way?
I don't know. I'd have to. I always think it's like people, policy, platform. I would have to think, because in my world, I would just start screaming at the person for being ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess it would be like Donald Trump is abusing different agencies around him by appointing inexperienced people. We went through some whole exercise where there was a really strong way to word this. But this was like 2 or 3 months back.
I usually go to you find trigger words or you find trigger people. So any black person or any woman. So like when they say like, oh, you know, Donald Trump can do this, you know, whatever, Trump Jr. or Eric Trump or whatever. Then you say, oh, would you have been okay if Obama's children were special envoys in the White House? Or would you have been okay if when Obama was president, when Hillary Clinton was in the State Department, would you have been okay if Chelsea Clinton had been the ambassador to, you know, Libya or something? Would you really have been okay with that? Or would you have been okay with Obama coin or Hillary coin? Yeah. And then usually that's really hard because they're, you know, they see red as soon as they hear those names and they kind of lose it. But there's a name for that. This is a good like gaslight abuser strategy if you want to like be crazy in real life too. When somebody says a thing, you take it to the most extreme or the least extreme thing possible, where like you can say something like, oh, like I don't think it's right for somebody to, with no provocation, shoot somebody in the head with a pistol. And like the conservative response will be like, oh, so you're saying in America you're never ever ever allowed to even shoot a gun one time? Like it'll be like, like what are we even talking about at this point? Like this isn't even remotely comparable. Like, ugh. And it's like that with every cabinet member. These people are insane. Like, who would have thought the first Trump term would have looked like superstars compared to RFK Jr., Hegseth, Besant?
Yeah. Fucking Stephen Miller, Caroline Leavitt, day in and day out. One of the frameworks that we've been working on is that Donald Trump speaks like he does not want the Democratic Party to exist. He doesn't want the opposition party to exist. And it's a really good way to illustrate his authoritarianism, because throughout the past 10 years, he's called to lock up political opponents. He's called to do all this shit. But over the past, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years, he's become uniquely anti-democratic. He's now talking about hanging Democratic Party or lawmakers. They are trying to go for Act Blue. He called us gnats while standing in front of the military and said that we're gnats who need to be taken care of while like swatting away. Over and over, him and Stephen Miller call the Democratic Party like an extremist terrorist organization. And it kind of just seems like he doesn't want to have an opposition party. He doesn't want the Democratic Party to exist. And when you start to look at everything through that framework, like him stepping over, I mean, this just goes into consolidation of power, but him stepping over Congress to do most of his shit, a lot of his tariff stuff, he didn't use Congress. Even when he was appointing Lindsey Halligan and Alina Habba as attorneys, they both just got swiped out. They both just got rejected because he did that without Senate approval. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he doesn't want any checks, but he doesn't want the Democratic Party especially to exist. And
yeah, I thought it was really scary. And it's always hard to tell where we're going, because for as much as I hate Trump, like I really do feel like he's powered 100% by narcissism. So you kind of have to look at the people around him to try to figure out who's running stuff. You know, you have to look to like the Vance faction or the Miller faction to figure out like, okay, well, where is this executive order coming from? I thought it was really weird/scary when Donald Trump wrote that executive order, like appointing or claiming that Antifa was a domestic terrorist organization. Also, the way that these guys like force problems that are not things that we've talked about forever. Like if you were to look at the news cycle with the way that Trump talks about things, like you would imagine, I guess Antifa and Islamic extremism are huge terrorist problems in the United States today. And it's like, I don't know where either of these things are. These are like almost non-existent across today's political landscape. Meanwhile, they don't give any air whatsoever to any of the right-wing violence that's happened over the past few years, or they just blame it on the left somehow, or they just conveniently forget it. Trump did that. Oh, I don't know anything about that. I think several times when he's been questioned about the murders of the lawmaker and her husband in Minnesota, and then the attacks on the other ones, like, yeah.
But no, it really fucks with, this is like the Trump derangement call at this point. We're just going back and forth with awful shit Trump's done. But true. The one that really fucks me up too is over the past few months, he posted an AI video of Obama getting arrested and pulled into a jail cell. Then like 2 weeks later, he posted an AI photo of Chicago being invaded, and it said Apocalypse Now, whatever the fuck. I'm making fun of Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
And there's like legit jets going over Chicago where I live. It's kind of fucked up. And then they send the jets into Chicago. Then Trump says he wants to arrest J.B. Pritzker and the mayor. I just don't understand how this doesn't break through to the average person. It's pretty fucked up.
I think the big issue. I think the big issue that liberal media just didn't spend enough time fighting against was the problem is that if you can rewrite history, you can justify basically any future action you want with just the whole, well, they've already done it. And I don't know how you feel about this. Actually, there's two things that trigger me so much. Liberals have actually let go of like the truthfulness on a few stories that I don't even know why they conceded. One is for some reason, even Snopes and all the fact checkers have now conceded this, where they're like, oh, well, when Trump said there were good people on both sides, he wasn't talking about Nazis. Yes, he was. He was talking about the night march with the tiki torches at the Charlotte's Right. He was specifically referring to the night marchers. That was referring to the Nazi people that he said there are good people on both sides. That, I don't know why everybody, Ben Shapiro has a really good video covering this the day after, because it has to do with Jews, so it's the only topic that he actually cares about when people are being, you know, hateful or bigoted. And Trump was very specifically referring to the tiki torch marchers. And he can never disavow or call his side out for anything, so he had to both sides it. That's one where if you ask most, like if you were to go on any mainstream media network and ask them, they go, yeah, we lied about the both sides thing. Trump didn't really say that. And then the second thing is the Russia collusion, Russiagate. They're like, yeah, that was all a lie too. No, it wasn't. It'd be like, where were the indictments? Oh, everybody around Trump was indicted, and it's like 12 Russians were indicted for actual election interference stuff. Like Roger Stone was directly colluding with the guy who was literally hacking the DCCC and leaking everything online, the Guccifer 2.0 guy in Assange. Or Manafort was directly working with Putin over in Ukraine. Or it's just like, or the Trump Tower meeting. Like people just don't know anything about anything. So when they're allowed to rewrite the history and say, well, conservatives have never done anything bad, and the Democrats have done all these things that they haven't, then it's like, oh, okay, well, then I guess people are like, well, I guess the Republicans can do it, and it's totally fine, and it drives me insane.
Yeah, like, how do you think the narrative will be written about January 6th in history? Are we going to win the narrative on that one? Are you ever going to release your video? I think that's the one thing.
Oh, we're trolling? Oh, we're trolling now? Okay.
That's the bulwark between history remembering it as...
That's the fork in the road?
A feds direction. I saw some tweet earlier. Some guy was like, I'm a J6er. Yes, I was there. Yes, I like MAGA and the election was stolen. And then he was like, J6 is a feds direction. They made it all up in the same tweet. I was like, average schizo.
It's the MAGA same thing person. With people don't remember, but like early on in COVID, because the first, even though I don't know, people deny it now. I don't even know where people's minds are for COVID. But like when COVID first came out, the first batch, okay, it was pretty bad. You got really sick. It was killing quite a few old people. Like, it was a rough time. You didn't want to get it. And even the Delta one was, like, kind of bad. And back in those days, it was, like, a Chinese bioengineered weapon that was, like, the worst thing ever, and it only protected Jews and Chinese people, and it was going to come after everybody. And when Cuomo put that one old person in the senior citizen care facility, he was trying to murder all the old people. And then now if you ask anybody about COVID, it's like, COVID? Oh, that was fake. They only did that to push out the fake vax. Like, nothing even happened with COVID. That wasn't a real disease the entire time. And it reminds me of the J6 thing, yeah, where it's like, J6? You mean the peaceful protest where they just let all the people into the building where nothing happened? Or do you mean the violent fedsurrection that was masked Antifa men and Donald Trump's FBI, by the way, working together to frame Trump as a violent riot organizer? Yeah, there's like no real attachment. The conspiracy theories aren't even good anymore. They don't even make sense. And they usually end up being like mutually exclusive, the multiple positions they hold on the same conspiracies. And it's wild. The question you said, it's going to come down to what the accountability looks like at the end of this term. The thing that scares me the most is we have a really big win in the midterms and then maybe even in 2028. And we're like, okay, well, that's good. Well, we won. The American people show that they rebuked Trump and we don't have to worry about it anymore. But like all of the Republicans have learned their lesson of like, well, this is what we can get away with. So why wouldn't we do it again?
Yeah, like a return to normality. If we have another Biden-type president who tries to go back to the status quo. Uh-huh. That was a huge mistake. I think that Biden's presidency not only was a huge mistake on that, but I've been thinking a lot about just his pitfalls, and I feel like he fucked up on immigration a lot. He should have had a lot more clarity about that. It's almost like he was too scared to come off as like xenophobic in the post-Trump era, so he just didn't talk about it as much, and then it kind of got out of control. Obviously, the open border shit isn't true, but as I've thought about it more, I just feel like that wasn't good. The inflation wasn't his fault mainly, but he got blamed for that. He obviously couldn't communicate near the end of his term. But
I mean, that's kind of true. This is an unpopular one. I would never argue this on a big media show or whatever, but like the illegal immigration thing, that was a fabricated issue thrown up by the conservatives. And the reason why I know this is because, one, they've barely deported anybody and they all pretend the problem was fixed. So was it never a real problem in the first place? Two, people in swing states cared about that way more than they should have. I do not believe that there was a Mexican Underground Railroad, okay, that were funneling illegal immigrants up to Pennsylvania. I don't think that was happening, okay? And then number three, every time Trump brings up illegal immigrants, there were more and more that came in. Initially, when he was running, I think he said 15 or maybe 20 million. The last number I heard him say was 30 million. So I don't even know what it's going to be by the end. 30 million illegal immigrants? A tenth of the U.S. population is illegal immigrants? Like, it doesn't even make sense.
Biden probably could have had a little bit more moral clarity on the border, though. Like, even if he didn't change any laws, I feel like just talking about it more deters people from coming. I don't know, like,
I agree with you, but we're in this world where it's like, what could Biden have done to be better? But like, we're comparing this to, like, imagine somebody working so hard to prepare the perfect pasta dish and like the spaghetti sauce is like a little bit too sweet and you're like, come down and it was like, I'm gonna have to actually eat like the bowl of gaping diarrhea instead. Like, that's the comparison, because Biden had to deal with so much stuff, the Ukraine-Russia war, the October 7th, the recovering from COVID. He still got tons of legislation passed. He had to do the pullout from Afghanistan that was on Trump's timetable. We had like three or four huge bills. Like, there was so much stuff, and the economy after all of this was still rebounding, and he did it without attacking Republicans or trying to besmirch or demean conservatives, and everybody was working against him the whole time. His family was being investigated. He got investigated for documents. Hunter Biden was being investigated for on a claim that was, now we know, was made up by a confidential informant. The House Republicans and Gomer and Jordan are constantly, I'm sorry, I'm just saying, it's not a fair game. Biden. It's just like, it's like he had to deal with so much. Donald Trump
gets
12
gets
months to return documents to NARA, can't do it, and is lying about it the whole time. And he's like, I was unfairly prosecuted. He's like, give me a break.
I just think when Trump gets into office and he's able to close the border with some really easy like executive orders, and he uses a bunch of rhetoric that acts as a deterrent, it kind of made Biden's border policy look a little bit weak. And I know that it's more complicated than that. I understand that people were abusing the asylum process. It was shit like that. But I just think it's the same thing as like, well, this is a really bad example, but when Donald Trump signed, when he got that Israel-Gaza peace deal like a month or so back, and they put his face everywhere, I know it was short-lived, it was like 48 hours, but I remember thinking, wow. I remember speaking to some, they were like, wow, Biden looks really bad in this moment. But overall, I don't know, I just think that Trump has also undone a lot of Biden's landmark legislation, too. It's all really blackpilling. Biden's presidency was solid, he was good, but he fucked up on a few key areas, I think, and it really manifested when the next election came around. Like, when Biden didn't have the clarity on immigration, Trump was able to use rhetoric that was so, so far right that people didn't really have a good alternative. Like, what was Biden's message on immigration last election? I don't even know. I guess,
I mean, like, the immigrant, I mean, he had a message on 50 million other things. But, I mean, they had a bill that they tried to pass at the end that Trump literally had no problem sinking.
Like, at the end, though, I know I've used that same talking point, the Lankford border bill. I've used the same point, trust me. But I just think, like, 3 years into it, really, like, that's Biden's, I don't know. And this is me doing my most charitable, like, this is me criticizing Biden in the most charitable Republican lens. I'd be like, yeah, I think his immigration policy might have been a bit bad. Other than that, he mocks Trump on everything. Obviously, Trump's an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess obviously, my issue is, like, I don't even know what to point to for Trump. And as the years go on, like, I can still point to more and more things. Like, Donald Trump's first, Donald Trump's illegal immigration numbers were rising by year three. I think that on his third year, I think it might have been worse than Obama's last term was in terms of illegals that were coming through. And I think it's the same on the deficit as well. So, like, Trump didn't even do that well on his first term. Then the Republicans like to play this game where every single bad thing about Trump for all 4 years of his presidency, they'll blame it on COVID. But then as soon as Biden is in office, COVID like doesn't exist anywhere. I've like played,
they removed the variable.
Yeah. Like I play this game where I'll even talk. I think I did this on one of my events where I even said to the audience, I was like, watch this. And I asked the guy, I was like, what do you think contributed, the main thing that contributed to inflation under Biden? And the guy's like, I don't know, the spending. And it's like, anything else? It's like, the deficit, anything else? It's like mind wiped as soon as Biden comes into office. And then I remember listening, Dave Smith said this on Piers Morgan, where Dave Smith said, like, we can't have another Democratic president. Like, this is all, like, the censorship and everything is out of control. People don't remember 2020 was the worst year in censorship we've ever had in the history of the United States. Or people will blame the lockdowns on Biden. It's like, do you guys remember that Donald Trump was the president in 2020? Donald Trump was the president for the lockdowns? How does nobody remember any of this?
Yeah, that's another example of them. That is, it's such a good example. Every single time we point to Donald Trump weaponizing the FCC or weaponizing something around him, they say, what about the Twitter files? What about Twitter this or Twitter that? I think that's the first thing when Pete Buttigieg went on the All In podcast, the first thing they pressed him on was the Twitter files or like Twitter being suppressed or the government reaching out. And then they use that as a justification for every single crazy thing that Trump has said, like having his FCC chair, Brendan Carr, like openly threaten Jimmy Kimmel and his show. They openly talk about all this shit. These are some really good examples of, I don't know, like authoritarianism as well, uh-huh. If that's what we're going to debate.
I mean, yeah, I think the big issue is that, yeah, you have to dive into everything, because when anybody brings up the Twitter files, you can ask them, did you read any of them? Because like, oh God, what's the name of the guy that did the main one about whether or not the laptop story was intentionally censored or anything? Taibbi, right? Yeah. When you read what Taibbi wrote in the Twitter files, he literally said explicitly, he said there was no FBI involvement in censoring the New York Post story about the laptop. And he had all the emails that show them going back and forth. We don't know what to do about this. It does look pretty weird. And nobody seems to acknowledge that. They just say, well, there was a ton of like, they'll say things like there was a ton of pressure from the White House. Like the White House didn't tell them to like censor or ban anything, right? And like, well, no, but like the CDC was making recommendations on misinformation, and that can count as pressure. And it's like, okay, well, what about when Trump is literally suing people for saying things he doesn't like? Well, is Trump not legally allowed to do that? They switch from the moral framing to the like, well, what is he legally allowed to do framing? And it's so frustrating.
Sam Harris has a really good way of approaching this. He was on, what is her podcast called? Constantine's podcast with the other guy? Trigonometry. And no, he did really well. Sam Harris is like really smooth with it. He had a lot of moral clarity in the way that he spoke, and he was like, listen, there are times where maybe previous administrations have slightly overreached. Like, he was able to make this slight concession, even if he wouldn't make that concession, but then he was able to really bring it back and show that what Trump's done is 10 times worse. It's really worth a watch. He's able to cut through a lot of the bullshit on that podcast. It came out a few weeks back, but I think that I think that a lot of the messaging struggles over the next few years for Democrats, it's all going to be about affordability. That's really the thing that's going to hit home, because the economy is not getting any better. Trump says affordability is a con job. That's what every single ad around the midterms is going to be saying. Affordability is a con job, that statement of Trump saying it. As prices get worse, as Trump is rolling back some of his tariffs and everything in the store, save like egg prices, is up. Unemployment is up among young Americans and Black Americans. And I think unemployment among Black Americans being up is an early indicator of a weakening economy.
Sure. So I've heard the same thing said. I haven't looked into it, but I've heard the same thing said about like military recruitment as well, that they try to like park, you know, their car on those numbers. Like, well, you know, we're recruiting more than ever for the military. It's like, because nobody can find jobs. Like, the tariffs aren't helping. I hate, dude, Bessent and Lutnick. Watching either of these guys talk about anything about finance or the economy drives me so crazy.
Bessent is, like, surprisingly uncharismatic. Not to be an asshole, but every time he talks, he's, like, really stiff. And I'm like, this guy.
Bessent?
Trump is. Bessent, yeah. He's the one that's really uncharismatic. He's like, I don't know. He speaks like, I don't know.
What was the last analogy? He tried to do like a thing with, I wish I could remember the name of the lady. She asked him a question about something to do with the tariff or the budget or something. And he was like, oh God, what did he say? Do you know how much your arm weighs or something? Do you remember this?
No, I don't know.
Every time they're posting stuff about the economy, they always have like the wackiest and craziest ways to try to cope about whatever the numbers are. The fact that we just like lost the October jobs report and we're just not going to get like the official numbers on that. Just like, okay, whatever, dude.
It's kind of fucked up. What do you think the direction of the Democratic Party is? So obviously the most like Right now, Gavin Newsom in most prediction markets will be ahead as the Democratic primary winner of 2028. But in 3 years or 2.5 years, whatever the hell, who knows if this resist lib shit is going to be in? Who knows if we're all going to be like super resist lib, Gavin Newsom? Who knows if we want him on the national stage? Do you think it goes to more of a populist candidate? Obviously, new people can arise. If you'd have asked this in 2012 or 2013, no one would have said Trump. If you would have asked this in like 2005, no one would have said Obama. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to tell. But overall, like vibe of the base, it seems like anti-APAC is a winner right now. But I don't know if that's just over-indexed online, maybe.
Maybe I feel like when you look at polls that rate like how important, like there'll be like leanings towards Palestine away from Israel, all this, and people will have these feelings, especially in the Democratic Party. But like how much voters care about this stuff, it'll be like 6% rank it as their number one issue or something. It's like it's pretty far behind like five or six other big issues. I think the big thing that I try to key people in on, and I don't think the Democrats necessarily need to do this, but the Republicans have a very slick messaging apparatus that works all in unison with each other. When Trump is saying shit, every single person in alternative media, mainstream media, every lawmaker, you know, Mike Johnson on down, like everybody is repeating the exact same talking point. And what you do when you do this is you have this really strong arm where every time the Republicans put anybody out, it could be not Tim Pool or Candace, these people. Now, there's some fracturing there. It used to be. It's gotten really bad after Marjorie Taylor Greene left, especially. But prior to this, like the Republicans can throw anybody out there, and no matter what they say, every single Republican will be on point immediately trying to defend it.
Yeah.
Whereas on the left, if anybody on the left goes out, even if you say correct stuff, you're still going to have to fend off like 50% of the attacks are just going to come from your side for no reason. And then, you know, God forbid you say something wrong or incorrect, like you're going to get crucified by your side for, you know, whatever reason. Like, I think Jake Tapper is working on his seventh anti-Biden book right now about how horrible his senility was and everything. And it's like Donald Trump could come out in a wheelchair and, you know, not be able to speak. And Trumples would call him like Stephen Hawking 2.0. Like they would have they would have a story ready to go. They would laugh and meme about it, and they'd be all on board with it. I think I actually got into arguments of this. This is another, I would never argue this, I think, on TV or whatever, because it's just a hard one to carry. Intuitively, people feel bad about it. But I'll challenge people on this. When people say things like, oh, Biden was definitely senile at the end of his term. My statement to them is I can give you more evidence that Trump is senile than Biden was at his worst. And then my challenge is, can you show me something beyond just him having that really bad debate performance? Because we've got Trump mixing up names, thinking he's going to Russia when he's going to Alaska, mixing up names of countries that he said he solved, you know, wars with. The guy looks like he's, you know, constantly on the verge of or just recovered from some kind of, you know, transient ischemic attack. There's so many things. The guy's lied about his medical record, right? The exploding ankles and everything. Apparently he didn't tell us that, even though he was supposed to be in perfect health. But people accept all these things because I think the liberal media, unfortunately, plays into it as well. It's like we have to be critical of our own side. And I don't know how we combat that without being more aware of it, at least.
Yeah, I remember you told me one time, you might have been reviewing one of my debates and I was watching it or something. You were like, when a conservative is saying, the question to ask the conservative is, if Trump were to do this, if Trump were serious about this, would you still defend it? When the conservative says, oh, Trump isn't being serious about invading Canada, Trump isn't being serious about doing that, but it's like, if he were being serious, you would still defend him on that, and that's the problem. I feel like I need to start using that one on TV more. But yeah, right now it's just, like, I feel like a lot of these operators on TV, their job is to just muddy the waters at the very least. Like, when I'm debating against these people on CNN, how I view it is, obviously you want to get the win, but their job isn't even to get the win. It's just to muddy the waters on these strikes or muddy the waters on some of these things so people don't have clarity on what actually happened. There's something I talk about on my show a lot when it pertains to algorithms. It's like the pipeline to volume theory of algorithms. I'm always chatting about this. Mm-hmm. It's that conservatives have a really good pipeline that they pull people down, then they just hit you with a shit ton of volume. So some good examples of this are if somebody is a young dude and he has dating problems and he's looking up good dating advice online, it sucks him down this pipeline to Andrew Tate inevitably. And then you're getting advice from like the Andrew Tate types. Or if you're a young dude who wants to work out a lot, like I see my young friends liking workout reels, it takes you to Make America Healthy Again. And then it hits you with volume, volume, volume. It's happening with young women who just had kids. It's making them like anti-vax or like really, really skeptical of certain medicines that
birth control is a big one that they'll also fight with on women on too. That makes you crazy and mind controls you. That Lindsay Lee or somebody Lee? I remember she was talking to Anna Kasparian about how she was a big person, I guess, on the Democratic National Committee or whatever. And she left and said that she was mind controlled for 10 years by birth control, and is why she was making bad decisions.
Lindsay Lee. Lindy Leanne, that's crazy.
That person.
But then, like, well, people are like, or I have friends that are anti-AIPAC. They sucked down the pipeline, and now they're watching Candace Owens and Nick Fuentes, or they're just Christian, and now they're watching Charlie Kirk clips. And then once they suck you down the pipeline, they have so much volume. Like, think about how much Elon Musk tweets on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Probably about 50 times every day, and each tweet gets 18 million views, 10 million views, 300,000 likes. Think about how many unique clips there are of Charlie Kirk. Not just, like, repost clips, but unique clips of him, probably like 10,000, probably like 5 to 10,000 clips of him just debating college students. So that goes back to what I was saying earlier. For every clip that Charlie Kirk has of him dunking on MLK Jr.'s corpse or whatever, we should have 5 clips of us explaining Black American history and how important it is to know that redlining existed. I don't know, like systemic racism, for example, I think that term's probably got to go, but the concept of systemic racism, it's so intuitive and so true. Black Americans were oppressed for a few hundred years. Laws like redlining have put Black people at a disadvantage. That's the narrative that we need to be spreading to combat some of this really ultra-racist shit that's being clipped up all the time. And that's an intuitive narrative, but we're not really getting out there taking advantage of the systems in the same way. And that's something that we're trying to fix. So, like, I'm hiring a few editors, and in 2026, we really want to scale up the operation so that we have, you know, I'm doing these debates, say our debate on the 20th, be there, people that are watching. And then we have my Jubilee coming out in, like, early January. So imagine, like, all these clips are ideally being clipped up and spread around in a really, really solid way. Like, with Midas Touch, we work with Asen on Twitter, and he's a really good, effective clipper, but of mainstream media. We want to create our own version of that for alt media. And, yeah, create these pipelines of our own. Obviously, it's a simplification of what happens when mm-hmm. I say this pipeline thing. But, like, I've seen my friends do it. I see so many of my friends liking Nick Fuentes reels or liking Maha reels. Friends that I used to know in high school that were never really inherently political. They just think Nick Fuentes is funny or what he's saying is funny. And it's definitely not good that we're losing the clipping war this hard. And also, our candidate in 2024, as much as I think Kamala did well for 107 days, like she did what she needs. She did well, but she was obviously a bit too scripted. And she didn't go into a lot of the places, the high-risk places that she needed to be. So we need less of these risk-averse candidates. We need people who are out there. Like, whoever is not risk-averse in 2028 and is willing to go in these places and take these risks, I'm totally for. Mm-hmm. Anyone who runs on, like, dumping Trump's jet into the Trump's Qatari jet, emptying it out and dumping it into the ocean.
Yeah.
Prosecuting Stephen Miller and his wife and his kids.
And Hegseth and everybody involved with the... Oh, you're joking? Oh, just kidding. Okay. Yeah, I definitely
I was joking about the kids part. The kids part was a joke, but yeah, Stephen Miller could
So I agree with everything you're saying, but I still think all of this comes from, it's like a byproduct of the insane amount of synergy that all of these people have with each other. Yeah. And I think that because they have this synergy, all of this other stuff just effortlessly flows. And it's really nice because it invites other people into the media apparatus to work with them as well. So for instance, when you bring up like these pipelines that take you to all these different areas, RFK Jr. or Andrew Tater or Michael Knowles, right?
Yeah.
Noel Shapiro. Like, one thing that the conservatives do really well, I point this out a lot, when it comes to the far left online, the far left, they're playing like kind of like a social game that it's like faux political. It kind of looks like politics, but it's not really, because they don't actually care if they win or lose elections. They never care if they win or lose elections. They only care about the social media games. The conservatives only care about winning elections. They don't care about anything else, even if it means accepting people in their movement that they are ideologically, fundamentally opposed to, which you're starting to see cracks of that showing quite a bit now. But as a result of that, what happens is if there are like 10 people that heavily ideologically disagree with each other, as long as they're all supporting Trump, they generally just kind of stay away from each other. You're not seeing a ton of content. Every now and then, Ben Shapiro might say something bad about like Andrew Tate, like, well, we shouldn't support this type of, you know, immorality or whatever. But for the most part, these guys kind of all stay away from each other, and they congeal into this collection of content where they're all in their own lanes doing their thing, because at the end of the day, they know they're all for supporting Donald Trump. Whereas on the left, my God, like, we are fighting over so many different things constantly. You've got, you know, the New York Times attacking Gavin Newsom because he said, well, maybe trans athletes was like a step too far for NCAA stuff or whatever. It's like, this is what we're fighting over? You've got the endless, you've got the Jake Tapper book on Biden. You've got like all of these different parts of the media. And I bring this up to say that I agree that Kamala was too skittish when it came to going on podcasts. I would agree with that. But also, like, how easy for Trump. You go on Lex Fridman. When I went on Lex Fridman, I had to spend an hour talking about why I used the word retarded, I think. And Donald Trump did a 45-minute interview where he got no pushback from anything. From Lex Fridman, the dove. He got no pushback on almost anything. And Donald Trump's the guy who calls people bad names. That's what he does, you know? And Kamala Harris, when she goes anywhere, you had the whole games that they were playing to schedule them with Joe Rogan. You know that wherever you're going to go, it's probably going to be a rough show if they're like a centristy thing. You know that people on the left are going to attack you. You know your staffers aren't going to be happy with it because they all like, you know, tend or trend in the further left direction. You know conservatives are going to be attacking for everything. It's just, it's so easy when you're a conservative to go out and do whatever you want because there are no standards. They don't care. As long as you support Trump, you're good. Any accusation, any whatever, any conviction, you could be a 34 convicted felon, whatever, it's fine. And when you live in that world, just everything becomes easier. One other example I give is so funny. Democrats will get around and they'll do this thing actually similar to what we're doing right now, where we're like, how do we get our messaging better? What do we do? Why did Biden fail so much on messaging? How do we help the messaging? Conservatives never talk about that because they are the messaging and they know it. They are the message. Like Fox News would ever sit there and think like, man, why does Trump suck at messaging so much? They would think, man, we got a message better for Trump. Another example, you're never going to find like a Dominion lawsuit equivalent on the Democrat side, right? The closest you get is maybe the Donna Brazile thing, but that was the Democrats against the Democrats. Like it wasn't even close to the Dominion story. It's so bad. Jesus.
And now, speaking of like the Lex Fridman thing, now Trump called Tim Walz retarded. And the crazy thing is, people are driving by Tim Walz's house and screaming that at him. And people on Fox News and Ben Shapiro and Don Jr. are making fun of that, which I feel like, okay, whatever, trolly funny. But I feel like 10 years ago, that would be unthinkable. Like they're driving by people's houses and yelling stuff at them, yelling the word retard at Tim Walz and his kids or whatever. And that's just something that Don Jr., the son of the president, can laugh at. This is some crazy, crazy shit. I'm really sick of the double standards, how violence is. I mean, honestly, if I were somebody who were apolitical, I think about this lens a lot. Like, I think about if I were an apolitical young dude, if I were 23 years old and I weren't firmly in my liberal position, I would probably have been bullied into being MAGA at this point because of the way that people talk about young dudes. Like, not to be dramatic or whatever, but I've been called, like, a fascist sympathizer, fascist. You shouldn't believe that shit. And I'm the most, like, wholesome liberal, whatever the hell. Like, I'm not ever running defense for any of that shit. But no, I mean, the way that I've been, number one, pushed or like talked about by far, far left-leaning people, but also if I were somebody who were apolitical over the past 2 years, I would think that left-wingers are responsible for violence. I would think that Trump tried to get assassinated. There were two assassination attempts against Trump. I don't know the details about who tried to do this. I just assume that it's probably a left person. Then Charlie Kirk got killed for just speaking at a college campus. I don't really know many of the details. I'm assuming it's going to be a slightly left-leaning person. And then you see like BLM. I don't know. It's just really hard to illustrate. And what are you going to compare that to, like the Tree of Life synagogue that happened in a few years back when during Trump's first term? Like, this is a really good example. I have all these examples. There's a Walmart in El Paso, Texas that got shot up by somebody who's a legit white supremacist. Of course, these are great examples.
The guy who literally was on camera, like, I think passing by a white guy saying like, oh, I'm not here for you, just for the black people. Like, that was Jesus.
How do you break through with this shit? It's like, I don't know. Most people intuitively, if I were a young 23-year-old dude, I am, but we're apolitical. I would think that liberals are kind of lame. So we got to reclaim that shit. And I don't know. It just feels like it's an uphill battle sometimes. Maybe I'm a bit too nihilistic and black-pilled. But right now I'm trying to be as charitable to the MAGA narrative as possible. And when I see my not being charitable, but when I see my high school friends who are apolitical like this stuff, I'm trying to step into their shoes and see how charitable they would be to the MAGA narrative, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's hard because at the end of the day, like you said, a lot of it comes down to just like heavy factual stuff. And unfortunately, sometimes it comes down to like civics that people don't understand either. Like there are some things where if you understand the civics, like Donald Trump's personal lawyer making a phone call to anybody in any official capacity is immediately just the worst thing in the world. But like to explain like, well, why is it not proper? Well, if he's got lawyers in the Department of Justice, what's the difference between that and Giuliani, his personal friend who, you know, he used to be in politics? Isn't it the same thing? Like it's hard to illustrate to people like why you should have this immediate revulsion. Or a lot of people don't understand how like the Electoral College works. So why was the, trying to rig the 2020 election that Trump did? Why was that so bad? You know, didn't Hawaii do the same thing? You have to chew through so much propaganda.
Hillary Clinton, in one interview in 2016, called Trump an illegitimate president. So the fake elector scheme is
Isn't that the same thing? Yeah, and it's like, oh my God.
But someone tried to pull that out on CNN recently, and I was like, I don't want to do this right now. Legit, I was like, I don't want to do this right now.
Yeah.
It's just so fucking dumb.
And it's crazy, too, because they say these things, and it's like, well, hold on. You're saying, because Republicans, dude, they're so good. They're so good. I'm jealous, okay? Republicans are, they're just so good, okay? They say these things where they will they get to choose who represents us. So they'll choose the far left, people who are politically ineffective. So they choose who represents us, and then they force us to either defend quasi positions of theirs or positions that are adjacent to it, or explain why we don't defend those positions. And so the conversation is already one-sided. I bring this up a lot, that when you're playing defense, the best you can do is like lose no ground. That's it. You never gain any ground because you're always on the defense on every crazy lunatic thing that they find some random person online to say. And then you don't actually, but they know, when you talk on their side, they know how ridiculous this is. So for instance, you bring up, the two great examples are, one is the Hillary Clinton illegitimate president thing about Trump, right? Oh, okay, so Hillary Clinton said that. Well, that's crazy that you're saying that. How many, like, can we look at the Democratic Party, either lawmakers or people who thought that Donald Trump literally, you know, rigged the election? And it's like, the percentages aren't really that high. Like, that isn't there. Or when you look at the COVID stuff, when people talk about the vaccines, a lot of Republicans now will say, oh, well, when the vaccines came out, you guys said that they were going to be 100% effective. If that's true, then why are Republicans the only people who heard that? Because no Democrat heard that. We all had the memes about, like, did you get the J&J or did you have the Moderna or Pfizer? Nobody thought that they were all 100%. Nobody. You guys said that we thought that, but we didn't. And somehow you're able to, like, highlight that on our side. And I don't even know what we're arguing about because, yeah, we don't make any arguments about what's actually happening anymore. It's just like, this is the fantasy land that conservatives want to create, and then we have to fight in that fantasy world all the time, and they're happy to keep the battle locked there for as long as possible, while Donald Trump operates basically as a lawless president who pretends that he is the only member of our government.
It's gonna be so nice to be back in power, dude. Oh my god, I hope the Democrats have learned a thing or two and we kind of get back into power and they're a bit fierce with it, because we need a new version of the party. I was really disillusioned. So let's try to think back. On election night, I was live streaming. And I'd been saying for a few weeks, like, we did a panel together a few weeks before, and I said, I think Trump might win. And I remember everyone was like, wow, you're a buzzkill. But we were all like, no, there's a legit chance Trump could win. And we all knew this, right? But it just kind of smacked me in the face on election night when it happened. And I remember being like, oh, fuck. And then thinking about Elon Musk being in power, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, it's Elon Musk, RFK Jr., all these people have won. And then throughout the next few months, I started to get really, really blackpilled about the entire Democratic Party and how weak they are. And all my friends that used to say Democrats are kind of spineless and weak, I started to sort of see that. And I feel like you're more of a Democratic shell than I am. Like, you're pretty hardline. You don't like when I remember we did a podcast in January and I was trying to criticize the party after we took a fat fucking loss, and you were like, nope. Even now with Biden's immigration, like, maybe I'm going a bit off of intuition at that point where I'm just like, it feels like Biden's immigration. I'm doing the thing that who's that one guy you just talked to recently? He's like, I feel like Tom something.
Oh, he's like, Tom Bilyeu. Like, my mental model.
I don't know. But
I mentally map. It's Tom Bilyeu, yeah. My mental mapping of you says that we have intuitively these disagreements. Like, okay, well, I just gave you 20 examples. Can you give me one thing in counter to what I'm saying? Yeah.
No, I get it. And it just feels like, but then I started to get really disillusioned with the Democratic Party earlier this year, just because it felt like they weren't meeting the moment. We weren't fighting back. The Democrats were being kind of pussies. The messaging sucked. And now I'm starting to really like the fight that some Democrats are putting up. Trump's been outmaneuvered a few times. The Democratic shutdown was a good example. We picked an issue. We had the ACA subsidies. We stuck through that. And then Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie in a small little group of Democrats outmaneuvered the entire Republican caucus by putting this discharge petition up to the floor on the Epstein files. And that kind of smacked Trump and Speaker of the House Mike Johnson on the face. Then Trump, like 2 days before the vote, switched his position entirely. And then
pulled the rug out from under the Republicans in Congress.
Under Mike Johnson, mainly. Mike Johnson
already was getting slated. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the Democrats are starting to find their footing. But I think this was all me just saying that I hope when we get back into power, we have a little bit more of that oomph. Or we've at least learned something over the past 2 years. And it's not some return to norms. And I want to continue, like, my goal is to continue being somebody in the party who, when I go on these CNN hits, I view it as sort of an exercise in messaging, too. Like, how can I beat this Republican messaging? And I know that's how debates are. That's what they're for. But, I want to be someone that can continue to represent, like, that fight wing of the Democratic Party so that can be a consistent, rather than just receding back into our shell once we get back into power. And
yeah, even for somebody who traditionally I just usually don't like the way they carry themselves, even Hakeem Jeffries stuffed it up hard when people were trying to do that whole, wait, weren't you guys trying to do $1.5 trillion in healthcare for illegal? It's just the most random made up stuff. They just like, it's the most random made up stuff. And the craziest thing too is they'll like tweet stuff that doesn't even say, I remember they tried to tweet like the part of the bill or whatever. It's like, you know, if you just read these three pages, it doesn't say this. Tulsi Gabbard did it when the Russian paid operative, who's somehow the head of our DNI or whatever, when she released all of the Obama era stuff that proved all the horrible rigging that Obama did, because Obama rigged the deep state against Trump by waiting for Trump to win the election and then telling all the intelligence agencies to say that the election was rigged, whatever her convoluted story was. But if you read the documents that she released, it doesn't actually say anything that she's agreeing with either. And the ability for these people to completely fabricate anything, I can't imagine how much the wind was taken out of the sails of them too when that shutdown ended and they thought, okay, finally, at least we can message on that the Republicans were the ones to end the shutdown. It's like, oh god, the Epstein stuff, oh no, it's back. That I think that one too was incredibly effective.
And then also the shutdown shit isn't fully over because the ACA subsidy is expiring. It's still a ticking time bomb. It happens on December 31st. Mm-hmm. So once the ACA subsidies expire, a lot of Americans will directly connect that in their head. Like, I have a friend whose mom is reliant on the subsidies, but didn't know she was reliant on the subsidies until the government shutdown shit happened. So it put that issue to the forefront of her mind. And now, I mean, it's going to be like a house of cards scenario. I feel like we're on December 29th at midnight. They're going to pass something and then it's going to save the ass of the Republicans. And yeah. I've heard that Trump is working on a solution, but then Speaker of the House Mike Johnson went out and had to tell him, like, sir, most Republicans aren't actually down to vote for an extension of these subsidies. So, but I heard he has a plan coming in roughly 2 weeks. So,
yeah, 2 weeks. It's right around the corner. After the illegal immigrant number is 40 million under Biden, and then after we've raised $30 trillion in external investment, and then after we magically find more money from the tariffs that we didn't know we had before, and all the other numbers and figures that this administration makes up, the one thing,
look at the skin tone in the video I just sent you, and then you can keep going.
I tweeted about this today with the orange guy.
Really weird shit.
It's pretty,
I just kind of saw it.
Yeah, pretty crazy. The one saving grace, because I am a Democratic shill and I will shill for Biden, I think history will remember Biden fondly. The thing that I like the most, only if we do this, the thing that I appreciate the most about the Biden administration is Biden really, really, really tried to do everything the right way by the books. Like, Garland took all the time in the world. The National Archival Records Administration waited all the time before the FBI was notified, and they tried to get, they did all the dotted their I's, crossed their T's, let the cases get dismissed and everything. So when we come back into power in 2028, I hope that can be the springboard that we can use to be much swifter and more aggressive with whatever exists within the outer perimeter of legality. Because on the other end, you know that they're going to be throwing up, well, don't you want to bring the country together? Don't you want to, isn't this not okay? And it's like, no, we tried that. We did. We tried that. You're never going to find a person who is more like that than Biden, who was a senator for like 492 years. There was not a single assassination in this country where the guy had like a, you know, I'm doing it for Biden sticker on his backpack or something, or where he's listening to Biden Kamala Harris speeches to get radicalized and inspired. Like, Biden was the, conservatives always say, Biden was the compromise, okay? And you didn't like him. You threw him out the window. So no more Biden, no more Garland. It's going to be way more aggressive on the next administration. And the conservatives deserve it. Like, they messed all of that up more than could ever be imagined, I think.
You didn't like Biden? You're about to get what's standing next to him. Biden was a nice guy.
Exactly.
Biden was a nice one. Now you're stuck with us. But, it's definitely not good. And I think that, I don't know. While Biden was saying that he's a president for Democrats and Republicans, Trump was posting photos and videos of Biden like tied up in the back of a truck. Mm-hmm. Remember that? The decal of Biden tied up. It's fucked up. Most Americans don't realize it, but the messaging is really important. And I feel like we've been making a lot of progress on that. Like, the people are realizing how fucked up and demented Trump is. His popularity is dipping really fast. There's obviously always going to be that core base, but
people don't realize, you only need to peel off like 5 or 6 percentage points and they're like unelectable. You know, you don't have to turn like half the MAGA movement. It's just a few percentage points and they're basically, sunk.
Dude, I think he's going to go really downhill over the past 2 years. So he doesn't like being out of power. He's really like a child. Like, he turns into a narcissistic child when he's losing power and when he begins to lose ground, like he did on January 6th. I could see him legit throwing some temper tantrums. I honestly want his legacy to be ruined. I want it to be bad. I do not want in 50 years when I'm in my old age for like fucking people to think he's like a Reagan type, where they still are like, yeah, Trump was like a Reagan type. He's like, I want there to be clarity that this guy tried to overthrow the government. Like, for the rest of my life, I'm going to be talking about the fake elector scheme. I'm going to be talking about the Pam Bondi post. My grandkids are going to be like, Grandpa, what the fuck are you talking about? Who's Pam Bondi? I'm going to say, he tweeted three names. Two of those names were indicted. You wouldn't understand. But yeah, for the rest of my life, for real. Like, this is some fucked up shit.
And it's so crazy. Like, what? Like, you know, Dad, why did Trump run with a different vice president the third time? Well, he wanted the first one killed. You know, it's a long story.
For real, fuck.
Yeah, can't believe whether we elected him again or
we have power and now he's back. Nothing happened. Like, fuck.
There has to be big accountability stuff. Because the question is like, why wouldn't they just do it again? And I think Democrats need to really think about that question, because it really needs to be discouraged, because it's not just Trump. Like, Trump was a figure that could only come about in the Republican Party, you know? Like, I bring up the Biden stuff, and you know how Biden basically got kind of like pushed out from all sides because the entire establishment was like, this probably isn't our guy, yeah. You know? The media was not okay. I think Obama came back, was having conversations, not okay. That type of thing can never happen to Trump. Right. Like they ride or die with this guy through everything, unless they think he's legitimately about to die, I guess, because he's getting too old or whatever. And there are so many examples of so many things. Again, going back to the senility thing, like Biden was senile, like he didn't know what was going on. It's like, can you show me a single video of Biden having an executive order explained to him before he signs it? Because Donald Trump doesn't seem like he has any idea ever.
Bro,
when he's signing.
He doesn't know about half of
his
pardons.
Yeah, for
Biden's
huge dudes.
Founder.
And the guy with the truck guy whose defense attorney, one of his two defense attorneys was Brad Bundy. Like, wait, what?
Fuck.
It's so blatantly part. Oh, and you misspoke earlier because you said Trump's crypto scam. You meant Trump's crypto scams, because Melania has her own scam coin too.
True.
And it's like, how do you even, like, right now, like, I feel like these are easy asks too. They'll never admit to it. But you could literally be in a panel and be like, hey, just curious, you admit right now that an anonymous person that you'll never know about could give a huge sum of money to the president of the United States through Bitcoin, and we would never know. We would never have any idea about it whatsoever, right? Like, what is it? How is that an acceptable state of affairs to anybody?
Or people that we do know about, like Justin Sun. He wasn't able to step foot in the U.S. because he had an SEC investigation into him, this Chinese billionaire guy. He put $70 million in a World Liberty Financial, like in the Trump coin. And then he was able to step foot in the United States. He went to a Trump dinner, a White House dinner. This is one of my Jubilee prompts was, Trump is the most corrupt president in American history.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, and there's like a million examples. There's no way that, getting through all of them is impossible, you know?
It's fucked up. Fuck, I had something else to say, but there's just so much corruption shit. Let me go through some of my notes for, like, his fascism.
The family stuff. Dude, watching, that one guy, our envoy, Witkoff?
Oh, my God. Witkoff needs to be – he needs to be prosecuted first. When we get back into power – like, you know, he was advising Putin. He was advising Putin's aide on how to get into Trump's – like how to manipulate Trump.
Yeah,
from
a plan. Yeah, all of that leaked. But even more than that, the fact that the Witkoff is like directly associated with that huge business that Trump's, I think, kids are associated with, that goes around like selling deals all over the world while he's also the envoy.
World Liberty Financial.
Yeah. Like, how dare you ever bring up conflict of interest? And also, and this is hard too, not to hit on my working class people, I think sometimes people don't understand the scales of money involved sometimes with how crazy some of the Trump stuff does. Like, once you're past like $1 million, it's all the same to people. But like, people don't realize, like, the Republicans, you know, kicked up a storm over Hunter Biden, whose like lifetime earnings, I think, is on that Burisma board, were like $5 to $10 yep. million dollars. Donald Trump's crypto stuff and the deals that the firm that his son-in-law Kushner worked for, well, these are on the scales of billions of dollars. It's not even remotely yep. close. The nine-figure, ten-figure deals that these guys are behind sometimes. But we threw up so much on Hunter Biden, and there's not a word, not a peep about any of this stuff. It's crazy.
Dude, so there's this one analogy that – or this one example that the New York Times wrote about a few months ago, and it said that Hillary Clinton, when they took office in the early 90s, when Bill Clinton took office – essentially there was a scandal, a months-long scandal, because she turned $1,000 into $90,000 a decade prior, a decade before taking office, because she traded cattle futures. So a decade before the Clintons took office, she turned $1,000 into $90,000. Now, Melania Trump met with Jeff Bezos in the White House and then got a $40 million movie deal with Amazon, and there wasn't even a day of headlines about it. It was just swept under the rug. So it shows how, like, the scale of corruption, the scale of them monetizing the White House is next level. Trump's net worth has gone from $4.3 billion to $7.3 billion over the past 10 months. I was talking to Michael Cohen once, and he thinks that it's more like $10 billion. He thinks it's almost tripled, doubled or tripled since Trump took office, which is just insane. But again, people both sides, like, we really need to find a way to message against this both side shit, because they'll say, oh, Nancy Pelosi did this, this person did this. And it's like, Nancy Pelosi's corruption is a grain of sand on the beach, and Trump's is a sandcastle next to it of just pure crypto Qatari jet corruption. They're building a golf course in Qatar that Trump used taxpayer dollars. It's all fucked up, and now it's just like, yeah. I mean, we've been sitting here listing all the things that we hate about Trump, obviously, for like an hour, but like, how do we break through with all of this shit? Because now we're just circle jerking.
I think it has to be people in the media. One, people can't let people just lie anymore. Like I said, it's Katie Collins, and there's one other interviewer that does a good job at this, but it can't just be that they're just allowed to say a lie and then have that, you know, be left unchecked. Like, they need to constantly be called out. They need to constantly be fact-checked. Because if you're listening, if you think that zero people died in the Holocaust, and I think that 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust or whatever, and then, you know, I'm allowed to go on and argue for 6 million, and you're allowed to go on and argue for zero, and the guy, you know, when you say zero, the guy's like, well, you know, maybe, you know, but the other guy makes a point too. It's like, okay, so maybe the number is like 3 million, I guess. Like, that's not a win. that's not a big W that the W that people think it is, when the other side is just like shamelessly lying. So I think we need more accountability from our media, and it has to be the mainstream media, because holy God, the alternative media sphere is just the worst thing in the world. As two members of the alternative media, no offense to either of us. Well, you do mainstream media stuff now, but like,
there's no accountability mechanism. Like, I could fuck up in a video and no one's going to get fired. I'm not going to like have any repercussions. I'll correct it in another video, but we could fuck up as much as we want. But I mean, I was on a network recently, and I called Pete Hegseth an alcoholic, and they spliced out that word. And I realized me saying that, gives exposure to the company.
Sure.
If you're not allowed to say, so I'm like, oh shit, like they're legit serious about this stuff. But I don't know. I'd want to interview Trump. Like, interviewing Trump would be such an interesting thing. I feel like he'd throw a tantrum, but,
I think it's also good, just on that thing real quick. You said, for how do you cut through? It's important to hold them accountable on things they failed, because they're very good at moonwalking away from things like Doge. Everybody knows that Doge was a monumental failure, and that needs to be brought up over and over and over again. That was another thing I was saying. Yeah.
But yeah, we should talk more messaging before. I've got an interview to do in like 30 minutes, but we should talk more messaging, not only before this debate, but just overall broad debate shit.
Mm-hmm.
Prep is really important. I can't believe you were like, do you still prep? Because I find prep to be very, very important.
Oh, I guess maybe the level of people that I talk to now, usually once I've wheeled out like 5 or 6 examples, I'm either going to be really nice, in which case the debate is a waste of time because the other person's just going to pretend not to know anything, or I'm kind of mean and then the other person just leaves because they can't contend with any of the facts, and then I feel like it's a waste of time to argue anything. But
I'm still pretty early in my like debate career, so I've got a lot to learn, especially in the long form debates. Like, I'm pretty good at the snippy, like, you know, get clips and do this and do that. That's like more of a game, right? Yeah. But I'm still working on my broader debate stuff, so I'm excited to get better.
That should be fun.
Yeah. 2026.
Do you think, do you see there being a big future with Turning Point USA, or do you think that like the loss of Charlie Kirk is probably going to permanently kneecap that organization? I shouldn't use that analogy, but harm that organization, I guess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I was going to use a worse one, but never mind. But, I think that, so originally in the aftermath, I thought that there was gonna, like, I was a little bit worried because a lot of my friends from high school were reposting all the Charlie Kirk shit, were sending, there was a vigil in my hometown, like a really small hometown in Indiana, and my friend posted a video of the vigil, and it was like, I was like, bro, the Charlie Kirk effect is massive. A lot of my friends who were just vaguely Christian, who didn't know anything about politics, were reposting him and then liking reels of him saying vaguely conservative shit, and then they go down that pipeline that we were talking about. So legitimately, I was like, okay, this, I think this had an actual cultural impact, his death. Like, I think it legitimately moved the pendulum a little bit over. It was like the reverse of George Floyd when people, not this situation, but when people were getting fired after the fact because the cultural pendulum was swung so far in one direction that anyone who, I mean, people were making fucked up jokes about George Floyd, but I feel like there were probably some cancelings or firings back in 2020 that were like, whatever. And now we see the opposite of that. We see people making vague jokes about Charlie Kirk and they lose their job as a teacher. So I was like, we have a legit cultural swing on our hands. But overall, like, you made this point early on, but this is really true. I don't know, like, leadership is really important in an organization like that. And Charlie Kirk seemed to be a good leader who could act as someone who kind of kept these different coalitions together, and recreating that type of face or that type of leadership is going to be hard. I still think they're going to be really good at turning people out. Like, this event will be a good indicator. This event, I bet, will be huge. I bet they're going to register a lot of voters. I bet they're going to have a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. I bet every conservative wannabe commentator and commentator from across the country is going to be there. It is still going to be the home for all of this. But I can't say that it's going to be more effective now that Kirk's dead, because I think leadership is really fucking important with this stuff. And he built something unique. I mean, he was able to guide this and lead it. And again, he had the vision. I don't know who else has the vision of what's going to happen next. He probably had some ideas on where he wanted to go and what it's like. Like, I think, like, Vivek took over one of the Turning Point USA things. Like, is Vivek, and he got griped multiple times. Yeah. Just like, you know, Brylan Hollihan, you know that kid who gets griped multiple times? You know, Brylan Hollihan, you want to be the young conservative guy who was sitting on the jet.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about. Yeah, Brylan Hollihan.
There's a lot of, that's more drama. I was going to say gay accusations. I've seen the Milo Yiannopoulos back and forth about Benny Johnson.
Yeah.
Have you met just curious, have you met a single Benny Johnson fan in real life? Do these people actually?
No, I think it's a little bit astroturfed. I've even met Dan Bongino fans. Like, but not Benny Johnson fans. I think that it's a little bit astroturfed. He's a little bit of a slime ball. Like, he's like fake charismatic. He'd be a fun one to debate. I was on Piers Morgan with him, I think.
Yeah. He's like 100% rhetoric. Like, there's nothing behind those eyes besides just pure sycophantic obsession. Yeah. The person I hate the most, Jack Posobiec. I can't believe this guy's like in the press pool or whatever asking questions. Have you heard anything about this book? Was it like Unhuman or whatever? Unhumans or?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard. Yeah, where he says some fucked up shit in it.
It's basically just like his view, his characterization of like political enemies who are like liberals is just like all these people are more radical in their personal lives or in the things that they say behind the scenes. Even when you look at the January 6th stuff in a dark way, it's very funny. There's like pre-Ashley Babbitt and post-Ashley Babbitt. Pre-Ashley Babbitt getting shot. It's so funny because I'm turning on like InfoWars to go back and like listen to this. And they're like, this is the second American Revolution. Like, we're here. It's an insurrection. We're taking over. It's a revolution. It's the second birth of the United States. And then after Ashley Babbitt dies, like, Alex Jones is immediately like, I saw a lot of I think there's even a direct quote. I think it was an Alex Jones quote, or it might have been the guy hosting on InfoWars, because Alex Jones is on the ground. He's like, you can tell that these are real American patriots out here. This isn't Antifa, guys. And then like 5 hours later, Alex Jones is like, there's a lot of Antifa that got in here. I think they were behind everything and blah, blah, blah. As soon as they realized that they weren't going to win. It's so crazy. Ugh.
Okay. This book, Unhumans, the foreword is by Stephen K. Bannon. That's a good sign. But we got a lot of work to do for like global liberalism to be restored, because all of these algorithms are tilted against our favor. Elon Musk currently owns X, and X is like, Elon Musk is legitimately, I'm a little bit sick. Elon Musk is legitimately using X to push European countries to the right now. So like, right-wing populism is really getting popular in Europe, in the United States. And some of this may be, I think liberals need a stronger stance on more clarity on immigration in some of these countries as well, so that right wingers aren't able to control the narrative. But yeah, there's like a broader shift towards right wing populism that we have to fight back against. And I think liberalism is the way to go. I think we just need to sort of redefine how we message it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Yeah. And then also we have to be careful when people talk. I highly encourage, if you don't know anything about Europe or European immigration or issues related to European countries with specific types of immigration, don't talk about it, because it's very easy to see when, especially like when Constantine, they did this with Hassan, they got him on this. The immigration issues that countries in Europe face is way different than in the United States. And if you try to link these one-to-one with each other, if you're debating it to be anything, you're going to get smashed on it. So the issues that we face are very different. Even though the conservatives try to make it sound like it's all the same, it's not. So yeah, that's a different, I do agree though, that's a different argument that has to be had. But it's hard for European liberalism to be defended, I would imagine, when the big boy American country, the big boy liberal country America, is kind of, you know, having issues with the liberalism on its own. So,
yeah, bro, Russia Ukraine was a big issue. Like, you got me into that a few years ago, and I've been following that a lot. My entire framework for this war is, like, so far since Trump has gotten into office, he legitimately has given. So Zelensky has given every concession that Trump has asked for since he got into office. Right when Trump got in office, he had the shitty mineral deal that he proposed. Uh-huh. And even after he screamed at Zelensky in the Oval Office, Zelensky still agreed to the shitty mineral deal after some negotiation. Then Donald Trump wanted to do a 30-day ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine, and Zelensky laid down his arms. Zelensky was totally fine. Putin kept fucking bombing and kept firing. Then Trump tried to set up a meeting. He tried to set up multiple peace deals, a 28-point peace plan. Every single time Zelensky was the one that was game, he was the one that was down to do it, and Putin was the one that was playing the games. And I don't know if you know Vlad Vexler. He's a YouTuber that uses a lot of really smart frameworks.
Yeah,
he always says that Trump views Putin as a source of narcissistic supply, in the sense that like I don't think Putin has P tapes on Trump. A lot of my audience thinks that like Putin's paying Trump off. I don't even think it's blackmail. I just think Trump is so simple that he views Putin as a source of narcissism. He sees something in Putin that he sees in himself. He sees value. And then he looks at Zelensky and he views Zelensky as like, you know, he wears worse clothes. He's kind of groveling, got a groveling voice. He's a little bit he's got a smaller country. He's like geographically in a weaker position, so he thinks he can just yell at that person and demean that person while he has to roll out the red carpet for Vladimir Putin. So when you look at it through that framework, he then gives these concessions to Putin, not even concessions, but he only demands concessions from Zelensky and demands no concessions from Putin time and time again. And that's essentially how he's getting fucking dog walked this entire time.
Yeah, you have to use like very simple frameworks when analyzing Trump too, because he's so dumb. You can't. There's never like a larger picture. And I really do think that narcissism explains a lot of his behavior. Not like clinical narcissism, yeah, but just like he's really obsessed with that. He really likes that concept of like a big man. Like in his mind, the president of the United States just basically does everything for the government, and like he doesn't know what Congress is or what they do or whatever. And he can do anything he wants because he's the president of the United States. And he literally got a Supreme Court to sign off on immunity from crimes, you know, for him. So, hey, you know, why not? And, you know, you can say that, you see this sometimes directly in what he says, right? I want my military to, you know, treat me the same way that the North Korean military, you know, treats their leader. Or for a while, he repeated this weird talking point. I know I would bet my whole life to. Sometimes Trump says things and I'm like, Putin just told you this. When Trump started to utter these weird phrases about how like, oh, the borders that we have with Canada are so arbitrary, I'm like, that's 100% that's a Putin talking point. Or this weird thing that he started doing when he was at the Oval Office, or the one where he's got like the, will he bring in other foreign leaders and he talks to the press or whatever, where he starts repeating this thing over and over again. He's like, you know, for Russiagate, Russiagate, they hunted me and Putin. They came after both of us. Like, he sees himself as being one of these great leaders, and he wants to do like big country, big power politics. And, you know, China's always the one winning and ripping everybody off, and everybody's after America and Russia, and Putin is strong and China's strong, and he wants America to be strong, and we should be able to bomb Venezuela the same way that China should be able to maybe take over Taiwan, the same way that Russia should be able to attack Georgia and Ukraine. And Trump just wants to play like that game because it's all fun and games to him, and it feeds into his ego.
How do you reconcile, this is something I've had trouble reconciling a lot, and maybe you won't even agree with the framing of this question, but how do you reconcile Trump being such an idiot on policy and everything like political oriented, but he seems to have decent intuitions on how to play the game? Like, he seems to have an intuitive understanding of game theory, even if he doesn't even know what game theory is. Like, I shit you not, this old, decrepit, idiotic guy has outplayed the Democrats like 19 times since I was 14 years old. Like, I've grown up watching him outplay the Democrats, and he's won twice, so he's doing something right. Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries both have a higher IQ than Donald Trump, but we can both see that there are times when Trump has outplayed Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. How do you reconcile Trump being able to, like, win? Or am I just conceding to his framework? I don't know.
I think so. The Republicans are just playing a different game, and partially it's because of that, and it's because of like the fact that Democrats have to hold the country together that they're able to play that different game. So on the Republican side of things, people forget this. Trump didn't make his money in fucking real estate. Trump was not that great at real estate. He inherited a ton from his dad. He inherited a ton of money. Trump made his money, and Trump got his big, big, big recognition with The Apprentice. That's why people know Trump today in the United States. That's why he won the presidency. So Trump is playing this game of like celebrity stardom, and the Republican Party for a long time has basically been preparing their their fan base for that type of stardom. You know, we don't look too critically at things. The leaders that we have aren't intellectuals. They're entertainers. Our Michael Savages, our Glenn Becks, our Rush Limbaughs. You know, we don't have the boring NPR voice. We've got the rock and roll music and, you know, the people screaming at each other on the radio. Like, that's who we have. So the Republican Party was, like, uniquely positioned to bring an entertainer up. But then also, like, if the Democrats were to have played a similar game, like, you know, we're about to, if this presidency keeps trending in the same direction it is, Obama had to come in after, okay, Bill Clinton was the last budget surplus. Mm-hmm. Then we had 8 years of Bush, who had trillions of dollars in the Middle East, all sorts of bad, just disaster. Based. Yeah. And then.
Bad.
Yeah, bad, yeah. And then Bush Jr. caps off his administration with the financial crisis, the global financial meltdown. So Obama has to come in. We have TARP. We've got to deal with all this stuff, you know, bringing the economy back. And then things start to, you know, build back up again. And then after 8 years of Obama, we get Trump. And then after the end of Trump, we have fucking COVID and the mismanagement of that. And everybody hates each other and everything's crazy. We had the largest riots of, like, U.S. history with BLM and everything else. By the way, I don't know if you know this number or not, but I'm pretty sure 8 of the 10 largest protests in all of U.S. history have occurred during Trump's administrations. So then we have after Trump won, we bring in Biden, who is an amazing bipartisan president, tries his best, despite a historically divided country, passes more bipartisan legislation than we've seen since, like, the New Deal, just an insane amount of stuff. And then after all of that was put together, now we have Trump again, and Trump is doing whatever he's doing now, and whatever these 4 years are going to look like, we're going to have to bring in another Democrat to clean things up. So while Republicans are kind of, like, getting to play this game in the background of building the coolest celebrity who's, like, the funniest guy with the best one-liners, Democrats have to come in and play that game, because that's what Americans, I guess, are voting on for whatever reason, while also, like, trying to hold the country together, because Republicans don't want to govern anymore. They don't govern. Congress has done nothing, and the Republican Congress has willingly handed over so much of their power to the president. Just happily, they don't do anything. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I think that, like, someone, you know who I think would be really hard to debate? You've done a really good job debating him, but I feel like Tim Pool is uniquely hard to debate, not because he's a clever or good or smart debater, but because he's just really shameless. Probably one of the most shameless debaters I've seen out there.
Yeah.
And he really pisses me off. Like, how you feel about Jack Posobiec, I feel about Tim Pool. When I watch him and the way he plays defense and will, like, he did this debate with Pisco where he switched his view legitimately within 60 seconds of saying one thing, he said something else. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, like, really on your shit and catching him on all of this, then he'll just shamelessly slime around. And he's got a massive audience. Nobody in the audience even notices when he does this. Someone needs to
really no! just... Forget the Pisco one. You are right on that. Oh my God.
Beasley?
What? Oh yes, it was Beasley. Yes. The Beasley, I was so nervous and upset, and I was like, oh, Beasley doesn't know all this stuff because they're going so hard on all this stuff. And it was so funny that after both of them, Tim was, like, red in the face. He was like, you don't even know anything about your diamonds, you don't know anything, blah, blah. And then Beasley just, like, very calmly, like, in, like, 2 minutes lays out all these facts. And then he's like, wait, before we move on, you guys admit that you didn't know anything about any of this. Because then Tim has to start Googling, like, how do I find out what the charges are? Like, this guy's never read an indictment before? Oh, my God. Beasley just completely, and it was, like, 12 different people. Like, every time the camera switched, there was, like, a new fucking conservative night terror demon on the screen that was trying to argue against him. And, oh, my God, yeah. No, but you're absolutely right, because Tim, he gets so impassioned, and he says all these things, and it's like, hold on, bro, you're completely wrong about all of this stuff. And, it's so often like that. Oh, my God, that was watching
always,
Beasley.
He's always taking...
Well, that was so good. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, Tim Pool is the master of bringing up the most obscure shit ever, then pinning you down on it. Like, if you don't know what this riot of 1982 was, and how can you possibly know what's going on in modern day? And I don't know. And then if you try to pin him down, he'll be like, I don't know. I don't have to answer questions.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fucked up. It's an asymmetric. That's why I want to start my own debate show. We're starting our own debate show.
That's good.
And so there's not as much asymmetry in the sphere.
The hard thing about that, though, and that's always going to be hard, and the Democrats need to figure out a way to get the fuck over this, because it happened a lot with the misinformation stuff. It will be asymmetrical until the Republicans, like, wake the fuck up and come back to reality. Like, the problem is, if you try to make any real policy or enforce any real rule set anywhere, the Republicans are always going to complain, because they're always going to be negatively impacted by it, because they have lived in delusional fantasy for so long that any rule set is going to feel biased against them. And you're absolutely right about that Tim Pool stuff. I imagine if I had taken $5 million, even unknowingly, from Israel before
I
any of my...
Yeah, no,
That's just, it's unspeakable. It's crazy.
I get accused of taking 7,000 from Israel.
The APAC, that claim. I don't even know where that, I've heard Nadine do that on Peers a few times. The $7,000 a month, which isn't even, compared to the money that flies around for some of these people and the deals they make, is crazy. $4.8 million. And he's like, well, that was just that's a normal deal for shit. Me. Oh my God. Yeah.
Someone needs to come on his show and confront him about that. I know a few people have tried. So Sam Cedar tried. Soypill did it too. But then during Soypill's appearance, Tim Pool just said it didn't happen. He's like, what you're saying didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And then Soypill tries to bring up the name of the guy in the indictment. He's like, have you ever seen this guy in real life? Just the way that he does this shit, I don't understand. Yeah, something about it really does blackpill me. I keep going back to the same theme of the asymmetry of how like they're able to really slip away with this shit. Mm-hmm. We would never be able to. Like, I wasn't even involved in the Chorus Brian Tyler Cohen stuff, and I defended it too. I wasn't even involved in it, though. And people in my subreddit were making threads. People were emailing me asking why I took Chorus money. And it's like, dude, Tim Pool is out here with 50,000 live viewers taking Russian money, Literally. Slamming on his desk about how Ukraine is the enemy of this country. Liberalism, I said this earlier, liberalism worldwide is struggling, and it's because of people like this that command massive audiences. Nick Fuentes is pushing illiberal views and acting like it's normal. He's really sanewashing them in a lot of these interviews too. Like, he's doing a good job on this podcast circuit, coming off as likable. Mm-hmm. And I know this because I'm like a few years younger than him, and my friends are all reposting Nick Fuentes stuff. I have a friend from high school who's black and who voted for Kamala because I was trying to, you know, get him to, it took months of debating in our friend group chat. Everyone has the friend group chat they debate in and shit like that. We were debating and stuff like that. He's apolitical, and now he's always sending me Nick Fuentes shit. And I'm like,
oh no, I was just about to say, you got it over Kamala. People should go to you for advice. Cause the joke I always make is when somebody sends me a clip, it was Candace Owens. Somebody sends me a clip like, hey, can you look at this Candace Owens stuff? I know that in 6 months, this person's completely gone. There's nothing I could say or do to save them. I thought you were going to say you managed to dig this guy out of it, but no, once they start watching this stuff. Yeah. And it's like, the stuff that you have to argue with, I remember for my friend, the first clip was like, this guy's arguing about the like MH370, some Ukrainian flight that was lost to the ocean or whatever. And like, I clicked this guy's channel. First of all, it's like a 2-hour video with Candace, but I clicked his channel and he believes in the ether for physics. Like, he thinks that everything exists. And I'm like, why would I even waste my time debunking this? And it's like, oh, so you're going to write him off like you get mad that people write you off? And it's like, well, it's not the same. I don't believe in the ether. I'm not a flat earther. And it's like, well, isn't it, shouldn't you be able to argue against it then? It's like, this is true for some things, but not every, it's not possible to argue against every single minor point. Meanwhile, you know, like you said, yeah, these guys, remember, for them, the Hillary email thing, which they wouldn't even be able to tell you what happened at the end of the day. Whatever was there was enough for them to talk about it for a year. The big man showing up in the hacked emails by Guccifer 2.0, by the Russian intelligence, by the way, that was enough. The big man, that one phrase was enough for them to talk about Hunter Biden's laptop for 4, 5, whatever years now. But for Trump, him being on TV with the, was it the Indonesian guy where he's like, oh yeah, I can set up a meeting for you and Eric, no problem. Yeah. Or for any of the stuff that's for Tim Pool, $5 million, illegal Russian money came in and was done illegally. Like, none of it matters, just right off their back without a second thought.
He gets to lie about bringing in $18 trillion. There's a clip of Zuckerberg leaning over and whispering, like, did I throw out the right number?
Yeah.
And I've seen you debate on this, but my debunking of the entire $18 trillion thing is that he says $18 trillion. When you look at the White House website, it says $8.8 trillion, but none of that is founded by any of these numbers. So, like, they're counting bilateral trade with India as like these $500 billion as counting towards this total number. There's no enforcement mechanisms in any of these contracts. Like, if you're going to have a contract that has continuity between administrations, there needs to be some sort of enforcement mechanism. You need to make sure that you're actually getting what you're saying you're getting. Instead, we have countries that are abusing Trump's childlike mentality and throwing out these massive fucking numbers. Like, oh, $500 billion. Did I throw out the right number? $600 billion. Yeah. So you have these crazy numbers, no enforcement mechanism, no actual, like signed pages. And there's some examples, like there is an EU framework, there is an EU deal where they lowered tariffs, but if you look at it, it's also fucked up because like tariffs were lower before the deal. We tariffed Switzerland, where we already had free trade with them, or we tariffed some countries like South Korea, we already had free trade with them. It's all so fucking dumb. There's so much to debunk. But
or the whole auto pen thing, where like it's so transparently obvious they just brought this up to try to get rid of Biden's pardons, and there's like zero evidence of any auto pen. Well, the only evidence that exists is that apparently Trump used some on a bunch that he had to resign, but this is just like a totally fabricated, like every now and then a conservative will say something and I'm like, I've never even heard this word before. I'm like, is this the new thing? And then like the next day every conservative is saying it. Like, where did this even come from?
Yeah, we've got a lot of work to do. We got a lot of messaging to do. I've got to start prepping for this interview. I've gotten like 15 minutes, but
yeah,
we
sure
should
thing.
start chatting more about broad debate stuff. Like, I don't know. Let's start doing more debate prep because I really want to keep pushing in that direction. I like it a lot. Use some of your frameworks and shit.
Yeah. Otherwise, you need to leave now, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I've got to go prep for this, but
okay. I'll see you at AmFest in 12 days.
Yeah, we'll chat before that. Let's live out again soon. Let's do some debate prep together once we date the prompts. We can go back and forth and circle jerk about all the bad shit Trump's done because no one else listens. And no, on a serious note, though, I got to get ready for this interview, and let's chat more in the next week or so before AmFest. We can do another stream.
Thanks a lot. Have fun. Be careful. And good luck with your prep, buddy.
Peace out.
Bye.
See you, brother. Peace out.
Adam's my number one lib guy. okay, real quick, because I'm sorry. I just fucking libbed out so fucking hard. I didn't even talk about this. We have picked a few districts to basically do. I don't know what the extent of our operations is. It's probably going to depend on, I say R, for National Ground Game, which works alongside, or is a part of, or is alongside the Unfuck America People Z and everything. Hold on. We started looking through a bunch of districts basically to try to figure out, you know, what are the good districts. Oh, I have it open up here already. I'm just losing it. What are good districts to try to campaign in? I think the goal is to find stuff that can be competitive, but it's like a little bit outside of what the DCCC would be interested in, the official Democratic Party. So I think it was basically looking from like anywhere from like plus four to plus six or seven, like districts that swing Republican, that there is a strong candidate that exists there for the Democratic Party that is probably going to be outside of what the Democratic DCC, hold on, I need to figure out, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is willing to support. And these are the guys that we, I think, ended up looking at. We've got Ed Fitzgerald, who is in District 7 of Ohio. I believe these are all congressional races. We've got Matt Rains from the 1st Congressional District of Montana, and then Emily Burge from the 3rd District of Wisconsin. And I think these are the three that they're looking at right now. I think the idea is that will you do interviews like you did with the pisser again? I'll try to do as much as I can. It'll depend on what's going on in my life, but I should be able to. This is, I think these are areas that we're looking at to have basically high impact in a way that stands apart from other races. So ideally, like, these are winnable districts. You know, we can show up in force and like move the needle on these more than other somewhat winnable districts that don't have our support. And then the Democratic Party is not officially collaborating with these people, supporting these people in these districts. So, you know, we can measure our impact really well. I suck at promoting stuff. That's my promotion. I don't know. What else do you want me to say? What is the money for? I think that this is... See, we'll have better info on this. I should have it. We have a Google Doc. I had to sit through like a six-hour deposition this morning, so I didn't have time to go over anything. I'm pretty sure it's going to be generally like what we were basically doing before. So it'll be like door knocking, canvassing. I don't know if voter registration is part of this. It might be too late in the thing for that. But it's just basically going to be doing whatever ground related stuff is necessary to, I guess, all these people win their elections, basically. Yeah. Usually people say DCCC. They do. Z says that a lot. Tell us to sub to YouTube as well. What is the goal for us? Do you need volunteers? We'll probably need volunteers when we start doing like official events and everything, I imagine. Oh, shoot! My sandwich got here an hour ago. Hold on.